Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hey everybody, welcome to the latest edition of the Lando Lakers podcast. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, here on the Believe Podcast Network. We got a great conversation that we just wrapped up with Kyle Goon from the Southern California News Group. We'll bring that to you in a second. Lakers basically at the quarter pole of the season, 13-4, as they head into the new week. Everything's going really well there. So we'll talk about where things stand. Obviously a very difficult week as well with the 1 year anniversary of the death of Kobe Bryant. Obviously big news over the course of the week. So that's something else we'll talk about on today's show and with Kyle. But first, I want to remind you that the Lando Lakers podcast on the Believe Podcast Network, brought to you by betonline.ag, with the Super Bowl right around the corner. If you're looking for a place to place a bet on any of these sports going on, the Super Bowl or otherwise, betonline.ag is the best and only place to lock it in. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, prop bets fun at the Super Bowl. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online, and there's always the online casino as well. It never closes. So head on to betonline.ag today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Again, that's betonline.ag and sign up today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Also wanted to take a second to shout out Houston Rockets big man DeMarcus Cousins. Do you all know he's got his own comedy show? It's called Boogie's Comedy Slam. We had a chance to watch it over the holidays. It was really funny. Steph Curry and several other NBA players, they're in the crowd. They're getting roasted. Mike Epps is the host. He's a funny dude. Features some also really good comedians like Gary Owens, Carlos Miller. Streaming right now on Amazon Prime. Also available for free on Tubi TV, T-U-B-I TV. Check it out, Boogie's Comedy Slam.
All right, so Andy, again, Lakers at the quarter pole. Things are going really well. That is one of the many things that we talked about with Kyle Goon. Again, covers the Lakers for the Southern California News Group. Thanks much for joining us. Lakers on the road. It's the season's almost a quarter of the way over. There's a lot to talk about, but the first thing is you are apparently the only journalist left in the entire world of journalism, certainly NBA journalism, who doesn't have a podcast. Why? Even Orem's got a podcast. Nobody cares what he has to say.
It's interesting. I think everyone has their little quarantine project, and mine has been to try and learn Spanish. That's going muy despacio, but you know, I'm not a tech wizard. I had a podcast when I was in Salt Lake City, associated with the Salt Lake Tribune and the Jazz, with the great Tony Jones, but at this time, I'm not sure. I just save all my fastballs for going on for you guys, you know.
How long do you think it'll take, Kyle, before you are confident enough to ask Mark Gasol a question in Spanish?
I'm definitely not there yet. tengo una pregunta para Mark. I don't know.
That's not bad. I got that. Well,
as long as you don't actually have to ask a question afterwards, like you're just setting up that you have a question. There you go. Like
just get his eyes lit up and then.
Yeah. All right. So the Lakers, after Monday's game, they're essentially a quarter of the way through the season. It is hard to find stuff to really dig in on them, like places of concern, glaring problems. I mean, there aren't that many. Are you at all surprised, Kyle, at just sort of how smoothly the first quarter of the season has gone for them?
Yeah, I mean, like I expected them to be good. I think I sort of had a win total in mind for that first, and in my mind, like I was just thinking, okay, it's not really going to be the season until that Milwaukee game, and they're a month in, they've had time to condition and all those things. So I was just thinking, okay, I'll give them, you know, 9 or 10 wins at that juncture because they'll still be good, but they'll be rounding into form. But I think the talent gap between the Lakers and most of the teams in the league is just higher than I thought. They've been able to, frankly, screw around a little and still win games. My interpretation is, you know, there's been a bunch of games where they've won, where, you know, it's been three quarters of cruising, and then, you know, LeBron or AD kind of at the end of the game swoop in and win it. So especially that four-game road trip in San Antonio, Memphis, they go 4-0, and there's not really one super impressive win in there, but it's just effort, right? But they don't need that much effort. And obviously, I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit about the holes, but my overall impression a quarter in is the Lakers really have a talent gap that maybe I would say right now, I would say two, and maybe if you press me, three teams in the league can match up to.
But Andy, yeah, it's funny. I was just saying, Andy, it's and throw this to you, but like it's you can see that sort of demonstrated that kind of improvement just in some of the numbers about last year. Like last year's starting lineup was dominant. You know, the Ringer broke this down earlier in the week ahead of the Milwaukee game. Actually, this year's starting lineup has been even better, like significantly better even than the dominant lineup from last year. And so you talk about like the impact of that talent. Net rating goes up from 12.6, which is really good. The current starting lineup for the Lakers, Andy, has a net rating of over 25. That's absurd.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, it's funny. I'm actually not surprised that they're off to this type of start. And I mean, this was something, Brian, you and I debated a lot heading into this season because you thought it was going to take them more games to really find a groove. And the reason I'm not surprised is because what Kyle was talking about before with the amount of talent that they have, they made a point of upgrading in terms of pure talent. Like adding Dennis Schroeder was an upgrade in pure talent. Montrezl Harrell, upgrade in pure talent. Mark Gasol, depending on how you define pure talent, you could argue, you know, whether he's better than Dwight Howard, worse, net neutral, whatever. But in terms of how he can shape an offense, he's without question a net upgrade in terms of pure talent. So, and I think Wes Matthews is basically Danny Green.
Yeah, like, we'll talk about him maybe at some point during the show, but yeah.
But on balance, when you take into account who was still remaining from the championship team that was really, really good, the fact that, knock on wood, they haven't had many issues in terms of injuries or in terms of COVID protocols, it's actually not that surprising to me because it seems like what they were setting out to do in a season where, you know, realistically speaking, you don't want these guys busting ass for 48 minutes. I mean, like that wouldn't be smart for the collective age of this team and what they just went through and the season they have in front of them now. So I think they planned really well for where they are right now. Like I think it was very much by design.
Yeah. And it's an interesting point that I think a lot of people are surprised about, but I'm not. LeBron has played every game. And there's a lot of speculation that, I mean, even LeBron himself kind of egged on that joke when he went on with Obama on a show and said, yeah, I'll cherry pick the games for the first half of the season. But that's not really in his nature to sit out a game. I mean, I think we've been all three of us in press conferences where, you know, LeBron talked about load management and he seems very disdainful of it. And, you know, he'll have games where he cruises and maybe he's not playing his hardest. You know, on both ends, and we've certainly seen that, but it's hard to argue one with the fact that he makes appearances and that he holds sacred this idea that, hey, if there's a game and I'm good to play, I'm going to play. And then, you know, just the results. I mean, just the fact that they have 13 wins right now, you know, 16 or 17 games in the season. You can't argue with that either, even if he is, you know, what I would say, being efficient with his energy, with his effort, sort of rationing.
He's been surgical, man. Like the way he's gone about figuring out when he needs to crank it up, when he can dial it back some, and never exerting like what is more than is absolutely required. It's a pretty fascinating game within the game to watch.
Yeah, but it allows him to do what you're saying, Kyle, which is play every game. It allows him to be there for, you know, any game he can. This is something I think that came up on Friday on the late night happy hour, every night from 10 to 11 p.m. Pacific.
You should be subscribing to it, by the way, too, whether in podcast form or on our YouTube channel.
We have extra podcasts because Kyle doesn't have any. But it's
there aren't enough podcasts in the world, and because Kyle Goon won't get off his ass and do his own, Brian and I have to create extra podcasts because God knows there aren't enough options out there for podcasts. People are really hurting for different places they can download hearing people talk.
We're going to get some content. That's what people are always saying. But like, you know, LeBron is one of those guys, like Jordan, like Kobe, who takes that obligation of playing seriously. It's not even the, you know, and I realize now it's there are no fans in the building to come see me kind of thing, which is one of the things that's behind it. But just TV, whatever it is, like they take that obligation very seriously. And this lets him do it. But he's not the effort level. And I don't mean like the required effort level for him to get through these games isn't what it is, in part because of that extra talent that they have. And, you know, there are some people, I think, Kyle, who worry that, you know, in the playoffs, you know, what if you can't use Trez? What if you can't use Gasol in the same way? I think any of those potential issues that might come up with the rotation, by the way, neither one of those guys are guaranteed to be in the closing lineup anyway. Right. They often aren't now. Any of those things are mitigated by the fact that you're going to have a much fresher AD and a very much fresher LeBron when the playoffs roll around. I mean, they're set up well a quarter of the way through.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that matters. I mean, and just furthermore on Gasol, as it relates to the starting lineup, I mean, I don't love to be the choir of people who are like spacing. I realize that's a little buzzwordy at this point in NBA offenses, but I mean, look at what they can do versus last year when the half court offense was almost to a fault, like stodgy, because you just had a non-shooter in the middle, whether it's JaVale, who I know he thought he was a shooter, and Dwight, who just didn't have the hands really necessary to make some of the finishes. I mean, he was at the line, I would say, almost as much as he was finishing field goals, even though he was shooting at a high percentage. It was definitely a guy who, you know, wasn't always finishing through contact, is how I'd put it, going to the line and putting up a couple shots. But Mark, just by virtue of two things, just getting out of the way and being able to stand in the wing, that the Lakers can run far more actions. Guys who drive to the rim, including LeBron, including Dennis Schroeder, they can have space to do that. And then, but you still have to stay on Mark because he's a good enough three-point shooter that, you know, in that 36, 35 range, that he'll still make you pay. And he does, you know, one three-pointer a game, basically. But that's enough. And so I think just the room to operate is so different in the half-court setting, especially that the Lakers just have a lot more answers. So I wouldn't even be surprised if they do go into the playoffs and Marc Gasol is in their closing lineup. I think he still could reach a different level of conditioning. It's I don't think that's where it is, but it's totally possible.
Well, I think they have this flexibility because there's a lot of controversy around the starting. What are you laughing at, Amy?
I was laughing just when you were talking about the conditioning with Marc Gasol. Marc Gasol every game, and look, he's doing what they're asking of him, but a lot of these games, man, he looks like he just showed up from a rousing game of beer pong and just went straight from the beer pong to the game. Like every single game, he has at least one possession where you see an expression on his face and it looks like those old posters from old school with Will Ferrell when he was at the party and like the beer bongs are around him. Like he always looks like
he's very aware of his own limitations.
I'll say this, and I think it was the Milwaukee game. There's like a 4-on-1 fast break of the Bucks on Marc Gasol running back on defense, and I swear to you, Marc Gasol beat them all down on the floor.
Yes, he did.
And forced it out of bounds.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's there, like it's like
as I've described him, because he blocks shots. And he's a deterrent in the lane, but he doesn't jump. He doesn't really move, and he manages to do this. He's like the world's most intimidating traffic cone. Like, it's just like the way he manages to be stationary and create all these problems. Like, I want to make it clear, I'm not saying he's out of shape. I'm saying he often looks like a guy who is indulging in the beer.
He's a 36. He's a 36. How old is he?
Yeah, he's about 36 year old. I think he's about to turn 36. But
he's never been a leaper. You know, I mean, and I respect Mark for a lot of reasons, but mostly because, like, and he's great when they give him to us for media availability, because he's just so self-aware. You know, talk about how certain guys are leapers and this and can move and recover. I am not one of those people. It's like I have to be.
I mean, the whole thing that brought him to Lakers is he said, you know, I like Toronto, love them, but I don't think, you know, I could have played the role that they needed me to play for them to win. Basically saying, hey, if I'm one of the best players on this team, the team's in trouble. So there's like a great deal of self-awareness from Mark. That being said, I think he can still get a little better, and you see flashes of it. And one thing that he does really well that AD doesn't do as well is when a guy is trying to bully you in the paint and post up, like Mark just doesn't really let that happen. If somebody faces him up and gets some momentum on him, then Mark might be in a little trouble. But if somebody has their back to the basket, Marc Gasol has a good chance of ending that possession before it does any damage. So his physicality, as you were saying, Andy, as the glorified traffic cone, but he can stay step for step in a guy if the guy has his back to him, and
yeah, again,
it's going to be hard to beat him.
He's not an issue. I think Mark's been fine. I mean,
they've got the best defense in the league. He's clearly not hurting them.
Yeah, right. I would like to see him take more shots and more threes. Like, he averages 1.5 per game. I'd like to see that more, 2.5, maybe three, just to make him more accountable. But he's been fine. I have no issues with Mark. I find him amusing just to watch on court. I find him sometimes hilarious. But he's playing well.
Yeah, and I was actually making this point with the Pete Zayas Laker film room about Mark being a top five body language player. With, you know, the very famous one is the one where he's like waddling his arms around on the court. That's
waddling.
The Hall of Fame
waddling.
I don't know
my
what that
point
is.
When like, you say just, waddling.
I'd have to look at it to describe it well, but like that's
not flattering. That's though. Waddling. Gift. That's not good.
It's not flattering, but it's very funny.
The question of the starting lineup question is still, I guess. I mean, when you look at the numbers, I'm not particularly worried about, you know, who's, you know, making changes in that starting lineup. The finishing lineup, though, is one that I think over the course of the season will get a lot more attention, particularly as they play more games in theory that require a closing lineup. They haven't, a lot of their closing lineups are like who's playing with 9 minutes to go, because they're blowing teams out so much. But go back to the Milwaukee game, for example. It was, you know, they closed with Schroeder, Caruso, KCP, LeBron, and AD. Like that in theory, particularly if Schroeder is starting, seems like the lineup that would be ideal for the Lakers as they start to settle into something for a fourth quarter lineup. Is that what you think it starts as? And then maybe Vogel pulls a guy here, maybe Schroeder. It's not Schroeder one day, maybe it's not Caruso one day, but it's that core five and then mix and match something off of that.
I think it's really anytime you're talking about the best lineup the Lakers have, it hasn't really changed from last year, and that it's LeBron, AD, and three guys who can play on the perimeter. And because AD, as everyone knows, once he actually plays center, he's probably the best center in the NBA. And then LeBron can be whatever you need him to be, muscling inside or shooting outside. He's shooting almost 40% this year from 3-point range, which is kind of ridiculous. And then just three guys who can defend. And I think KCP has been, I would call him underrated, except everyone's talking him up now, how great he is, and how surefire he's been shooting it. So everyone knows that now. And then Caruso is competent on defense. Schroeder, I think it'll be interesting. I think Schroeder is, by contract and by scoring ability, he's got to be that fifth guy. But then, you know, certain situations, I think you're going to look at Kyle Kuzma. You're going to look at, you know, maybe he hasn't been that great this year, but maybe Markieff is a guy who gets a look.
Right. They did. They won a title off that lineup last year.
Right. So I think that's going to be eventually the key lineup that everyone has to scheme for, figure out how to beat. No one's figured out how to beat it yet. And I'm interested to see Frank do that more. I think right now he's kind of with having 11 guys in his rotation, he's even admitted to us, like, yeah, sometimes it's not an ideal lineup. Like when I play Markieff, Wesley,
it's Wes, AD, yeah, it's LeBron, Wes, Trez, Kuzma, and Markieff they have a minus 30 net rating in 50 minutes.
It's not a good lineup, but it's just what you get when you're like, all right, I'm trying to give Markieff X amount of minutes. I'm trying to give Kyle X amount of minutes. I'm trying to make sure Montrez has enough touches to get his rhythm. And that's what happens. And to be honest, like, it just doesn't matter right now because they're so good. They just win the game anyway, even if they play that lineup. They were doing plus minutes against the Milwaukee Bucks with that lineup, just out of pure, like, Frank is just like, yeah, I'm going to do this because it's good karma to let guys play and touch the ball. So it's kind of an interesting situation they found themselves in. It doesn't really matter what lineup they play, but when the playoffs come, that'll be the lineup that we're talking about, the LeBron, AD, and three guys who can play on the perimeter.
Is that enough? Do you think that gives them enough, though, like lengthwise? I mean, if it is KCP, Caruso, and Schroeder?
Like I said, that'll be the case. Schroeder, really, even though he's the starting point guard, he's really the weird little piece in that lineup, right? Mm-hmm. So he can do some of the things that Rondo did last year, where he's like, I can take a lot of guys off the dribble. I can take a lot of bigger guys off the dribble and still finish. So that is such a valuable skill. On the other hand, like Kyle Kuzma, this year he'll give you shooting, and this year he'll give you rebounding. And he doesn't need the ball quite as much as Schroeder does. So you can make LeBron your point guard and then have Kyle Kuzma in as additional length and rebounding. So those are the pluses and minuses. But I really do think it'll probably come down to those six guys we're talking about and maybe seven, depending on the Markieff question.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it very similar to last year in that I think by and large, if you were playing the odds and wanting to bet on a closing lineup before the game began, assuming a closing lineup was needed, because like we talked about before, if this team actually played just balls out for 48 minutes and maintain everything they built up, like the closing lineup would be Alphonso McKinney, Devontae Kaycock,
Kuzma. And that's it. Just need two guys. That's
Jared
it.
Dudley.
My team is on the floor.
Right, exactly. I mean, I was hoping against Chicago, I was disappointed we didn't get more McKinney time. But I expect, by and large, it's going to be LeBron, AD, KCP, Alex Caruso, and then TBD fifth guy, depending on the matchup, depending on what you need, depending on who's playing particularly well. But
just for one point, like he's also a guy who's not underrated, but like Caruso's the second or the first or second best shooter on the team this year.
That's why I don't think he's going to be off the floor, because
I don't think so either. I mean, he would be starting for almost any team in the league right now.
If the shooting holds, the only argument you could have made last year for taking Caruso out of the closing lineup, which he was there for most of the time anyway, was that he wasn't providing you enough either offense and production or just offensive accountability. I would still like to see him shoot a little more, but he's shooting so well from outside, you're going to guard him. And that combined with the defense, and he's also just really smart, and he does things that keeps the wheels greased on both sides of the ball. I think he's going to be in most closing lineups. So I think it's really a question of that fifth guy.
I agree.
And these are good problems to have.
These are really good. But I think, Kyle, your point about Schroeder being the default to start with, both because of skill set. I mean, he is an excellent player, but also, you know, this is somebody they're kind of building that relationship with. They'd like to keep him around and, you know,
the politics of it. Yeah, they got the contract extension. Yeah.
Right. All of that stuff coming up. The politics at least point to the idea that he would get the kind of the first crack at that, in my mind. So, yeah, I mean, that these, again, major first world problems that the Lakers have. We have too many really good players to figure out who our five guys are to close a game. We're going to get into the Kobe stuff here in a second, but I do want to say, with the new year comes a lot of big games in sports. Big games, you need big steaks. Kyle, you seem like the kind of guy who enjoys a big steak. Get them from Kansas City Steaks. They have the cuts you crave to celebrate the playoffs and the big game. Visit KansasCitySteaks.com/gameday and save up to $25 on combos, perfect for game day. Plus, get free shipping with the code BELIEVE. That's BLEAV at checkout. Try the mini snack pack combo featuring small plates, big flavor. You got your mini beef Wellingtons with little steak burger sliders and mac and cheese melts and shrimp rack bacon and all that good stuff. Every order flash frozen, delivered directly to your home. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Basically, every cut of steak imaginable, plus appetizers, desserts, barbecue, and so much more. So again, go to KansasCitySteaks.com/gameday and use the code BELIEVE, BLEAV, to check out. At checkout for free shipping. Kansas City Steaks, big games, big tastes. So always fun to transition out of these.
We don't need, by the way, a podcast to use that code, Kyle. Like anybody can use it. So just in case in case there's any insecurity about the ability.
Goon rate. I feel like I'm in the Allstate commercials. Not giving them the goon rate on the steaks.
Give it a try. Just call them up. Let them know who you are.
Yeah, I mean. Let it use code GOON and just see what happens. I have way more confidence in the BLEAV, but you know, give it a whirl. I mean, that if you get rejected, then use the code we recommend. But either way, you know, give it a shot.
Just call up. Hey, Kyle Goon here. What can you do for me? Yeah, that's right. That Kyle Goon.
That's how I talk to everyone in real life.
Mistakes, Kyle Goon.
Here's really the problem. They'd be like, "Oh wow, Kyle Goon, absolutely! Like, can we set up a code with your podcast?" Well, sure. Oh damn it, no, we can't.
Forget it, man.
BLEAV.
All right. So this week, obviously, is a difficult one across the NBA. Certainly for the Lakers, we recognize the 1 year anniversary of. The death of Kobe and the others in that helicopter crash. It's kind of amazing that it's been a year. It comes 4 days after we were honoring the 15th anniversary of 81. So there's just an incredible swing. One of the things that I think is kind of fascinating about this is just the process. It is an uncomfortable thing to talk about, to bring up to people. It can be an uncomfortable thing to pitch stories around. As it's gotten closer to you, as somebody who covers the team, talks to players, and you know, is writing stories and thinking of ideas and things that resonate with your audience, how have you been approaching the anniversary of Kobe's death?
Yeah, just with a sort of a personal look at it. I mean, I think my approach for the story we're going to do for us is. Just sort of a legacy focused story rather than a day of the tragedy story. And one reason I decided that is because I felt like it's pretty sort of apparent the things that happened on the day of and how unfortunate it was and how trying it was for the Lakers. And you know, they've talked in various stories and podcasts and things about, just sort of the trauma of being on the plane and finding that out. So the way I've chosen to explore it, and I'm not saying that that's one good way or not. I mean, it obviously there's a lot of different ways to look into the story, but the way I've looked at it is, you know, what is the influence of the person? So that just is the thinking that has defined my approach. And so, you know, hopefully tomorrow we'll be able to publish a story that we've been working on. But, you know, in the larger sense, I just think it's hard for some people to kind of understand what we're doing. And I think that's unfortunate.
Really quickly, not to interrupt you, but just to clarify, when you say some people, do you mean the current Lakers? Do you mean your readers?
I mean the consumers, readers, people who are... Okay. Because there has been kind of a weird sentiment that, you know, we're poking our heads into other people's grief and how wrong that is and why should, you know, people relive this.
I think Kyle, that's a bit like there's a line between a line somewhere between the work that needs to be done in telling stories. I mean, this was a monumentally important moment, not just in for the Lakers, but in basketball and sports, in quite frankly, kind of American culture. Certainly in Los Angeles, all of these things. It's not like that you can just sort of, it's not something that can be talked about, but there is that line because Kobe is so beloved, particularly in LA, to where you can, you know, if you want a tweet to pop, if you want an article to pop, if you want like write about Kobe, and there is a line at which that becomes using the death of Kobe to help yourself over, you know, doing journalism or doing, you know, good service for your readers, listeners, whatever it might be.
Right. Yeah. And I guess the way I've approached it, to be honest, is I kind of want this day to be over, even before it's happened. And I think a lot of people who are close to Lakers probably, I don't know for sure, but I would guess if you talk to some of the Lakers on the team now, they're waiting for this day to end. And because it's traumatic, because it opens up a lot of things, because frankly, the last year, it has been a lot of time consumed with grieving, with mourning, with, aren't you guys going to win this for Kobe? And that's not a media driven narrative. That's something that the Lakers kind of announced for themselves that's something they were going to do. And that's a lot of pressure, for someone. And frankly, even winning the title last year, even though, you know, AD told us last night, you know, I think hopefully it brought some joy. There's no filling that void, right? I mean, we're talking about people who died in this crash, and there's just no way to heal that. Even if you win the championship, even if you do all the things you're supposed to do, you can't take that tragedy back. So I think it's just exhausting. But the way I've approached it is, look, I like the media does not decide that the 1 year anniversary is happening. Like it is just happening. It's just the marker of a very, as you said before, a historically significant event. And even if I wrote nothing, it wouldn't change that on Tuesday, there's probably going to be a lot of people going out to, you know, murals all over the city and playing games and wearing Kobe shoes and wearing Kobe jerseys. And that doesn't change how people interact with that grief. And that's how I've tried to approach it. I mean, thinking of a story that will tell a story about Kobe Bryant, hopefully, and not lingering in sort of the event, but thinking about the influence of that person. So I think as far as I don't want to speak for everyone because there's different approaches and there's different ways of thinking about it. But my thinking has been like, do something that marks that moment. But, you know, that hopefully, I mean, doesn't weigh us all down, because I think everyone feels it to some degree. I mean, I didn't cover Kobe like you guys did, for example. And I think a weird thing that gets lost in a lot of the dialogue about how we do our jobs is that a lot of media members had relationships with Kobe. And I saw weirdly last night some criticism of how Rachel Nichols has been going around asking guys, you know, what was your first memory with Kobe? Which is sort of the same thinking, right? It's not a get you down in the dumps type question. It's a question about sort of Kobe's influence and sort of the positives that make people celebrate him, right? And people have criticized this as if Rachel Nichols did not have a personal relationship with Kobe, as if they didn't have conversations, as if she didn't know him. Like, they knew each other well and corresponded and had lots of discussions that people don't know about. So it's just like there's something lost in this sense of humanity that the media has in their relationships with these people. And so it's not like in a vacuum people are deciding like, oh, we're going to exploit someone else's grief. It's, I mean, they're also going through some stuff themselves too that is really lost in this whole discussion about how the media operates around a big event like this.
And it, one of the things, you know, in what you said, Kyle, I thought was interesting and worth noting, like with Rachel, for example, who, you know, is as classy a person in this business as I think you can find. The context in which we're all working right now, Andy, has a huge influence on how this is like. Normally, these are the types of questions that you would pull somebody aside and in a quiet moment, you would ask them and, you know, you would do it. You know, but, you know, Kyle, you'd be on this road trip and this would be a great opportunity to talk to guys. Nobody has that. Like, you have the Zoom call and it's not how anybody would really want to be talking about this, but it's really the only access that we have. It's another way, Andy, I think, in the just the weirdness of the times is also influencing the way that this story and this moment is being covered.
Yeah, I mean, you'll hear a lot of reporters, whether you're talking about Rachel Nichols or Dan Wojcicki with the LA Times, after the Bulls game, or there's just ones off the top of my head, but others, Dave McMenamin with ESPN, when they
asked Rollins asked some questions with she's with USA Today. I mean, everybody was asking a lot of the same questions.
Sure, but what I was going to say, though, to your point, is when you hear them ask these questions, there's a lot of setup to the question, and the setup to the question is essentially the, hey, can I ask you this off to the side being done publicly, because there's no other way to do this. Right, a lot of that setup would be done before you even press record. You would be asking the player involved, hey, this is what I'm working on. This is why I want to ask you. Are you cool with giving me a couple minutes? And then you press record. You can't do that now. So all of this stuff has to be done in real time. You know, it led to, I think, a very, you know, it was awkward, but handled well on all sides between Mark Gasol and Dan Wojcicki when Dan asked Mark a question about, broadly speaking, just memories of Kobe. And Mark said, you know, it's just too raw for me. It's too painful. And I haven't talked about this publicly and I'm not ready to. And again, I mean, Mark didn't snap at Dan, and Dan asked the question very respectfully. And I don't think either one of them was upset at the other. It's just Mark made it clear, this is something that is too difficult for me to talk about now. You know, the idea also too of media potentially exploiting this, you know, I don't think it has not happened at all, but I also think that it can become very tricky when you're talking about serving an audience that is very, very connected to Kobe and very emotionally drawn to him, but also that still considers him part of the team. You know, he's a huge, rightly, part of the team that all of us cover. And they always make these connection points to him. Like there have been times where I have been conscious before of, there'll be a lot of times where I will bring up an anecdote or a memory of Kobe or a comparison point with Kobe that feels organic to me as somebody who covered him for a long time. And a lot of my career really is connected to Kobe, and also somebody that I think at least feels the fans enjoy this and they enjoy those connection points. And there have been times where I've wondered, like, you know, am I doing this because I know why I'm doing it. I know I'm doing it for the right reasons, but I guess I've wondered before, like, would anybody think that I'm bringing up Kobe simply because it's an easy way to maintain attention? I know why I'm doing it. I'm not doing it.
I count, because I count to five. Every time I tweet about it, I count to 10. I count to 20. I always linger an extra minute over any of it. Before we do, when we do late night happy hour stuff, it's, you know, guests will often come on, and, you know, particularly guests with a tie into LA basketball, and like Kobe comes up, like,
right,
and people's met, and like
the coverage of the thing doesn't change the thing, right? Like that's the issue.
It's really how you cover it, the how and the why. And I think by and large, at least I hope, again, because I'm one of the people that would be evaluated this way, I would like to think and hope that fans can read sincerity. I mean, and I guess, you know, taking it back to Kobe, when we'd be in these scrums, Kobe was very mindful and frankly pretty damn accurate at reading the sincerity of questions asked of him from, you know, from media. And if somebody was asking him a question out of a place of genuine inquisitiveness, or they were asking because they were looking for Kobe to basically fill a couple sentences or give a soundbite they need and basically make their job easier. And they didn't really care what he said. They just had something pre-written in their head and needed him. And, you know, he was, in a way that I admired, not afraid to call you out on it. And, you know, because I think he could be cognizant of the sincerity of media coverage of him while he was playing, I hope that fans have that same cognizance as we continue to do this.
Yeah. And I mean, the other point I'd make is, and this is stuff is really tough to gauge, right? Because I think journalism in general struggles with sentimentality, which is, you know, a real force in our society, but, you know, can manipulate sort of our perception of what's real. But look, I mean, the media were not also the ones who, you know, wore Mamba jerseys in the postseason. Like, that was not something that we asked for. You know, they put Kobe in multiple references on their championship rings. Like, this stuff really mattered to the Lakers. And at that point, like, it's got to be okay for us to ask about that. Like, and I'm not saying they shouldn't have done it. I'm just saying, if it matters to the basketball team, like, it has to matter to the media on some level, where we can ask questions about that. I mean, you know, when AD, and he brought this up last night too, it's like, hits his game winner in game two in the Western Conference Finals against Denver, says the word Kobe as he's firing the shot, like, that has to be something that we can ask about, that we can sort of say, like, what came to you in that moment, or what about that, you know, it's just, and that stuff matters. So it's not like a person died, everyone's grieving, it's like, better not to bring it up. I don't think that's a valid point of view. And while I do understand there's a balance and sort of a razor's edge of, you know, if, you know, we had been pressing Mark last night on, like, no, you gotta tell us about your grief. Like, maybe that's one thing, but I don't think that was what anyone,
nobody
call attempted, was there to do.
Nobody attempted a backdoor question about Kobe to Marc Gasol after he made it clear how he felt. I'm sure there were other reporters that maybe would have followed up, but had Mark been, you know, more comfortable talking about it, but he made it clear he wasn't. I think everybody was respectful, and he was respectful in the way he relayed that.
And it was, and, what was interesting to me, it's not to cut you off, Kyle, but, like, what was interesting to me about that whole media, post-game media Zoom on Saturday was just the sort of the degrees of it. I think Mark clearly didn't want to talk about it. Frank Vogel, I think, is not particularly comfortable talking about it beyond sort of the basic platitudes and things you would expect. LeBron, I don't think, liked talking about it, but did, I think, out of the obligation and the understanding that someone needs, like, the team needs a spokesperson on this sort of this issue to some degree. Anthony Davis, I think, kind of enjoyed it. Like, not, you know, but, like, everybody handles these things differently. And so for some people, talking about the memory, you know, it brought a smile to his face. You can actually see guys, like, he smiled, you know, like, he was talking about it, and he's not, obviously not happy, but these are happy memories for some people. And I'm not even sure he's one of them, but it just, in this moment, seemed like it. The talking about Kobe brought up good memories and good, you know, good feelings. And so this is even before you start getting into other questions of legacy and history and Kobe's past and all of these things. And, like, it, you know, people are complicated and times are complicated, and his career was so long and so deep in LA. This to me is one of the things that's popped out as an interesting aspect of this anniversary, because we know so much about his legacy and we think so much about it. But, like, how we talk about it is hard. It's a hard question that brings up a lot of the answers that I don't know are clear.
Because he's so beloved, because he's so influential. I mean, I think what you see is that because he's so dear to the people in Los Angeles, people have strong feelings about what's respectful and what's the right way to remember him. And I don't like, I understand that people feel an ownership of that. Because Kobe, like part of Kobe's appeal, right, is he felt like he belonged to the people of LA. He felt like he belonged to Lakers fans. And so I don't know. I try to stand in a respectful place with that. But at the same time, I hope people understand, you know, I there's no perverse sense of pleasure that I get about asking players and coaches and, you know, questions about Kobe Bryant. I mean, if anything, I really am counting down the days to when we're past this year-long mark. But at the same time, it's just, you just have to recognize when someone of that stature is lost, that that people are going to, whether I write anything or not, like people are still going to be thinking, reflecting, mourning, and doing all those things that reflect Kobe Bryant's legacy.
Yeah, so it's going to be a hard week for a lot of people around the team, around the organization, around the city. And Kyle Goon of the Southern California News Group, we thank you for giving us the time and talking about it, because like you said, it's not easy stuff to kind of get into. It's uncomfortable, I think, for everyone, and we definitely appreciate it.
I think it'll be good, and I think it'll be good for the Lakers too when we're sort of thinking about basketball and thinking about the mixtures of the lineups and how much can, you know, Wesley Matthews contribute down the stretch or whatever the questions will be. But I mean, I think we all like to live in that space where we like to think about basketball. It's been a challenging year, to say the least, to do that.
Challenging year and change. You know, it's just been, I mean, for the Lakers in particular, they've had a lot on their plate for quite some time. It's not
everything except the basketball has been hard. The basketball has been spectacular, but everything else has been hard.
Yeah. But appreciate the time, Kyle. Thanks a lot, man.
Really interesting conversation. We appreciate him kind of opening up about the process of it all in again, kind of unprecedented times. A couple other things that we want to wrap up before we go, but we do want to let you know that the Land of Lakers podcast here on the Believe Podcast Network, brought to you as always by Delicious Pizza, two locations in LA, one in West Adams, on Adams, and you go there, you go to the one on Sunset in Hollywood, 20% off if you tell them the Cam Brothers sent you. It is excellent pizza. Use the code Cam Brothers for 20% off. Excellent pizza. You're supporting local businesses and you are supporting a big Lakers fan. So you're doing a lot of good there, Andy.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the best way to go about really just benefiting the whole Lakers sphere. I mean, really, everybody connected to the Lakers, anybody 6 degrees of Lakers will benefit from you going to Delicious Pizza.
It's the overlap of the Lakers sphere and the pizza sphere.
Yes, absolutely. So definitely check that out. Again, Cam Brothers, 20% off, two locations, West Adams and Hollywood. Also support for the Land of Lakers podcast brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. It's why Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. Manscaped engineering team spent 18 months perfecting the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created and just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0, which sounds really, really intimidating. And that's also why you want to go to a company like Manscaped and not some fly-by-night operation. No. Like, I don't trust the off-brand lawnmower.
And definitely don't use a real one, that's for sure.
No. Oh, you know what? If you deserve a real lawnmower, you get whatever is coming to you. And I have very, very little sympathy. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Lakers20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code Lakers20.
All right. So, like, you know, we keep fighting this sort of thing on the podcast, Andy, where just like stuff's going really well for the Lakers, and pretending that it's not is kind of dumb. Like, we're not here to create drama and angst where there isn't any. Things are going well. I would say if you're going to start picking nits about the team and, like, you know, looking for stuff that's sustainable versus unsustainable, all this stuff, Wes Matthews hasn't looked particularly good. Like, you know, the he is, if you start to break it down, he is in basically every negative lineup that they have. Two-man lineups, three-man lineups, four-man lineups, five-man. Like, Wes is in almost all of them. You know, the shooting's been really streaky. He hasn't looked particularly comfortable. He's talked about it. Like, coming off the bench just hasn't been all that good for him. This is first world problems because it's Wes Matthews. But how big a deal is this? I mean, like, how much does it matter if Wes Matthews isn't playing well?
I don't know. I mean, they easily could have been 14-3 if Wes Matthews got his shit together. What's funny about that, though, is, I mean, obviously counting stats don't tell the entire story, but in terms of his actual production, he is shooting 44% from the field as we record this, which is not incredible, but it's also better than his career averages from the field by a pretty good margin. He's a 42.
Wes is a career like 41 or 42% guy, isn't it?
42%, yeah. And he is shooting 38.3% from behind the arc, which is basically his career average. The flat out biggest reason that Wes Matthews isn't producing a lot is actually that he just doesn't take a lot of shots. He only takes 4 shots per game. 3 of them from behind the arc. And again, he is connecting from behind the arc at certainly a credible level. He's been streaky, but, you know, a lot of guys who especially are going to be shooting from distance and often their shots don't come at the same time or with the same steadiness, you're going to get some streakiness. Defensively, yeah, the numbers don't rank out really well for him. But at the same time, when I watch him play, there's nothing that really stands out to me like where you're like, oh my God, Wes got beat again. Like, he's getting beat again. Like, he doesn't look like he's struggling necessarily to me.
Yeah. And he had the injury. I mean, look, he missed his first 8 threes of the year. That will mess with it. But then he made, you know, 6 in a row in that San Antonio game at the end of December, you know, misses a few more. He had a 4 of 6 game against Memphis, 4 of 8 against Chicago. So it's a little bit of all or nothing with him. Not uncommon with 3-point shooters.
As I said earlier in the podcast, he is their Danny Green.
Yeah. I mean, he's really taking that role literally.
He's like a method actor.
It's quite impressive.
He's going to be really, really good when in 3 years, Warner Brothers does the Danny Green story starring Wesley Matthews as Danny Green. He's going to be awesome.
It's like watching Daniel Day-Lewis. This just gets to, I mean, he hasn't played. I don't think Markieff has played particularly well. I mean, he's been fine. They haven't really asked him to do much. And it's worth remembering that Keith wasn't all that good pre-bubble last year either. These are their worst problems. KCP's not going to shoot what he's been shooting. Caruso's not. But, like, you know, in terms of underperforming guys, it's these two and Anthony Davis thinks he sucks.
I mean, if both those guys went down 15% from behind the arc, they'd be in really good shape. Here's what I would say with Wes that I think is actually just interesting about the situation. Clearly, he's not hurting anything. Like, you don't look at Wes Matthews and think to yourself, all right, this is a weak link if you want to frame him that way.
It's like the Schroeder in the starting lineup thing.
Well, I was going to say,
hurting, but.
Well, I was going to say, because this is something I've talked about a lot, that I think you would get more utility out of Dennis Schroeder if you played him off the bench, despite the fact that the starting lineup this season has been, like, through the roof incredibly effective. I don't think Schroeder is a particularly huge component in that. And if you look at his January numbers, frankly, it's a miracle he's not bringing a lot down. He has quietly had a pretty struggling January. And I think Schroeder's overall impact would be felt more with the bench. Clearly, a move is not necessary to be made. The flip side of that is, I actually think if you wanted to see a better, or at least a potentially better version of Wes Matthews, or maybe even one that just balanced out better from the numbers, you'd start him. You would take this guy who seems like he's the weak link of the team and you would start him. Because I think if he was in that unit, he would probably both eye test and even some advanced numbers be better, because he'd be entering that group that is killing everybody. Like, right. Just by being there, Wes Matthews' advanced numbers are going
to
go up.
It's so hard to figure out. Like,
I mean, do you agree?
The, I That his lineup numbers would improve.
Absolutely. All of a sudden,
you put Alphonso McKinney in that lineup, his lineup numbers would improve because playing with LeBron and AD makes everyone better. I personally, I'm not messing with a starting lineup that's got a net rating of 25.
Perfectly.
I'm not doing that. But the other thing that I think mechanically makes it probably a little tricky is it hard to create a rotation where you have two guys in the starting lineup who don't play 20 minutes? And so if you have Wes and Gasol in the starting lineup, neither of whom are, it can be done. I'm just wondering that out loud. That was literally a thought that I just had as you mentioned that maybe mechanically that might be tricky to do.
I don't think so, only because there have been plenty of teams over NBA history that have had kind of perfunctory starters. So right, two of them
in the same lineup. I don't know. It gets back to what we're talking. Everything's good right now. And they are going to have the opportunity to mess with these lineups, continue playing lineups that haven't been as effective if they want to try to make them work. That lineup that Frank Vogel was asked about this week that we mentioned with Kyle, with LeBron, Wes, Trez, Kuz, and Markieff. It's been terrible. But they have the flexibility to keep trying it or try versions of that because they're winning a lot of games and can continue winning games even if they give themselves, 8 to 10 minutes a night where they don't have an optimal lineup out there. It's going to serve them well in the playoffs again this year to have that kind of flexibility built into what they've been doing. So one quarter done and all is well, Andy.
Yeah, it's looking really good. It's been a lot of fun to watch.
All right, so a lot of fun stuff coming up this week. Good games, Monday in Cleveland. Then they got Philly and Boston before it's all over this week. Also Detroit, that's less exciting. Plenty of good stuff coming up to talk about. We'll do it here on the Land of Liquors podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. See everybody next time.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.